Genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is deeper understanding. Each of my guests will give us a deeper understanding of their subjects, whether it's money in the church, or the brain, or the operations of a Navy SEAL team. My first guest follows the money trail from the collection plate to the coffers of the Roman Catholic Church to give us deeper understanding of how the money is used. We'll examine the money trail recounted in his book, Render Unto Rome. My second guest examines the greatest computer in the world, the human brain. He gives us deeper understanding of the software needed to keep the brain operating at peak performance. We'll look at tools to boost brain power from his book, Extreme Brain Workout. My third guest will shed some light on one of the top news stories of 2011, the assassination of Osama bin Laden. He's a former member of SEAL Team 6, and he'll explain the workings of that team to execute one of the greatest political maneuvers of the 21st century from his book, SEAL Team 6, Memoirs of an Elite Navy SEAL Sniper. And if you want to join in the conversation or ask a question of any of my guests, you can call us at 639-0008. My first guest, Jason Berry, achieved prominence for his reporting of the Catholic Church crisis in Lead Us Not Into Temptation way back in 1992, a book that is used in many newsrooms even today. He's been widely interviewed in the national media. USA Today called Jason the rare investigative reporter whose scholarship, compassion, and ability to write with poetic power of Robert Penn Warren are in perfect balance. Jason's second book, Vows of Silence, The Abuse of Power in the Papacy of John Paul II, was co-written with Gerald Renner. Jason produced recent film documentary, Vows of Silence, based on the book, which examines the Vatican's system of justice in the sex abuse crisis. Jason graduated from Georgetown University with a BA in English Literature, cum laude, and he is a graduate of Jesuit High School in New Orleans. He now lives and works in New Orleans, joining us from there. Hi, Jason. How are you today?
I'm fine.
Welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being our special guest. And I guess the first place that I want to start is, as a graduate of Georgetown University and Jesuit High School, clearly you are steeped in the Roman Catholic tradition. So with such a background, what made you turn your journalistic training to exposing matters within the Catholic Church?
Well, in 1985, I got access to the depositions in a civil case involving a priest who had molested a great many kids in Cajun country. And I was struck by the language in that document of the bishop trying to explain why he had moved this man from one assignment to another. This was, you know, long before the scandal erupted nationally. And the more I kept digging, the deeper I realized this problem ran. And it took 7 years to do the book that came out in 1992. And, you know, I hoped at that point that the bishops would you know, sort of get their act together and put together programs, initiatives, you know, to get rid of these kinds of men. But it took another 10 years before the Boston Globe came out, and finally in 2002 they enacted a youth protection charter, which is imperfect, but much better than anything we've had. So all of this was sort of going on, and I just... I kept getting information, and it kept deepening. And finally, I turned, because of all the bankruptcies in dioceses, I turned to the financial story, and that's how I got to this book.
And that's where we are with your latest book, Render Unto Rome, The Secret Life of Money in the Catholic Church, which is the perfect combination of topics for my type of show. So let's set the stage for my listeners, Jason, who may not know this. The Catholic Church is the largest organization in the world. The Vatican, which is the seat of power for the Roman Catholic Church, has never revealed its net worth. The Vatican Bank is one of the most secretive organizations within a secretive organization, and unlike most private banks, does not have to make its balance sheet public. In fact, the Vatican Bank is completely off the books when it comes to the Vatican's budget on an annual basis as well. The church and its bank have extensive real estate holdings and investment in gold and other securities that conservatively estimated would be worth billions of dollars. Yet the Vatican runs on an annual budget of only $280 million. So for people who are in business, you think of an organization that has net worth of billions of dollars running on a budget of only $280 million. It automatically raises a red flag for some people. Most people, myself included, you know, see the collection basket passed around every Sunday. They don't give a second thought about where the money goes or how the money is used. We all kind of assume that it's going for charity or the maintenance of the church and so forth. You got curious. You decided to follow the money trail, as the expression goes. So talk to us. How does the money flow from parish, eventually, say, choose a parish here in Oxnard, California, eventually to Rome? How does that money flow?
Well, typically, a parish pays 5 to 15% of its donation revenues to the archdiocese or the diocese, as the case may be. And that's a good deal of money over the course of a year. 5% for the less affluent parishes, 15%, sometimes even more for the more affluent ones. There is an annual donation called Peter's Pence in the latter part of June, where dioceses across the developed world make a donation which is specifically for the Pope. Now, bishops often will augment what the collection plates take in. A bishop might put in an extra $50,000 or even $100,000, because when a bishop sends a large amount of money to Peter's Pence, it raises him in the eyes of the Vatican bureaucrats who count the money. The interesting thing about Peter's Pence in 2009, it brought in about $82 million, which is a lot, considering, you know, the global recession.
Right.
But only about $8.5 million of that has been accounted for, at least in public, by the Vatican. I tried to get figures. No one would give them to me. So most of the money went for uses that have not been publicly disclosed. That doesn't mean they were used illegally. It's just that we don't know. What I did learn, however, doing a great deal of research in the library, is that historically, for roughly the last 100 years, most of the times, Peter's Pence has gone to plug the Vatican operating deficit.
The operating deficit? The Vatican runs at a deficit?
It has run at a deficit for most of the last century, yeah.
Well, how come? I mean, what?
$5 million, $10 million. Well, you know, the Vatican city-state has its various offices, its various functions. They also have, you know, foreign embassies that they have to staff, which certainly exert, you know, require a considerable outlay. The Vatican Bank, however, which takes in a great deal of money, is off the books. It's not on the annual financial statement that the Holy See publishes.
Right.
So we don't really know how much the bank has, although I quote one report by a very esteemed religious correspondent in Rome, Sandro Magister of L'Espresso, who, citing his own sources, says that every year the Vatican Bank gives to the Pope roughly the same amount of money as Peter's Pence. So in years when they are not bringing in enough money to meet their operating expenses, they have sources of income to do that. Last year, to cite one example, Pope Benedict donated $250,000 to rebuild a facility that had been destroyed in Haiti during the terrible earthquake. That is the kind of philanthropy that we like to see the Pope engage in. And people who make donations to Peter's Pence will feel, yeah, that's the kind of cause to which my funds would ideally go. The reality is we don't really know how extensive the charitable donations are based on Peter's Pence. One thing is clear, the Pope historically has given donations to bishops from third world countries, from poor countries, when they visit anywhere $20,000, $50,000 at a time. There's no reason why all of this couldn't be put forth publicly in a way that people would understand, but the habits of secrecy run deep indeed.
Well, that they do. We're talking to Jason Berry, author of the book Render Unto Rome. Jason, even if they wanted to make this public, are there enough accountants and so forth to actually do the accounting work and then publish the financial statements for an organization the size of the Catholic Church?
Oh, yeah. You know, this is, even though it's the largest organization in the world, it is vastly decentralized. Every diocese in the United States has its own, accounting mechanism. Very few of the archdioceses or dioceses actually post financial statements that have been audited under, you know, the full standards of American accounting practices. Interestingly, Los Angeles and Boston archdioceses are probably the two leaders in transparency in this regard. They are both also running enormous unfunded liabilities on their pensions for priest retirement. Both of them are in the range of about $100 million that they have to raise to cover the retirement, for clergy. No, I think it could certainly be done, but it's a question of whether the problem really underlying all this is that the Vatican does not have a modern justice system, and the tribunals that it has under the canon law procedures really do not hold accountable any of the officials of the hierarchy. Cardinals and bishops have a sort of de facto immunity. We certainly saw that in the abuse crisis, where very few of these men were forced to resign, and even more so in the way money is used. Some of the standards that allow bishops to function with complete autocratic power are rather mind-numbing. In my view.
Well, now that brings up an interesting point. We're talking to Jason Berry. If these bishops and cardinals have what you would call immunity, and there is so much money running around Catholic Church, that the threat of the temptation, that's the word I'm looking for, the temptation to steal must be very, very great. Is there much embezzlement that actually happens within the Catholic Church that we don't know about?
Oh, there's a staggering amount of embezzlements. The best estimate I was able to find was about $2 billion over the last 35 years.
Wow.
And that comes from a guy, Michael Ryan, whom I cite in the book, and who provided a very detailed breakdown that I use in the footnotes. What's interesting about that figure, and there, I have a stack of news clippings in my office that's about a foot and a half high, of embezzlement cases around the country. They're now, you know, sending lay workers and priests to jail, to prison, for these theft cases. But what we don't know is how much the church has recouped from its insurance companies when they file a claim saying, well, we had an employee who stole X amount of money. That, however, would nevertheless drive up the cost of, you know, the premiums on insurance. The bishops could solve this problem very quickly by instituting a practice that Ryan, in fact, has long lobbied for. He hasn't gotten very far on it. But what it involves is every parish has to count its donations on Sunday, seal and lock the bags, literally with the money, and then the next morning, Monday, when the funds are put into the bank, you count the funds a second time so that the count you have at the end of Sunday matches the count that you have when you put the money into the bank. And that eliminates the tradition of what is called walking around money, by which a priest will take $500, perhaps $100, perhaps even more for his own uses. This is part of the clerical culture. It's been there for years, and the bishops are rather loath to end that. Just one quick parallel. I started saying in the early 1990s, after my first book, Lead Us Not to Temptation, that if the bishops would agree to a binding policy to remove any priest who had any sexual transgression with a young person, they would reduce this terrible abuse problem, as I saw it in 1992. Well, no one made any move in that direction until 2002, when the media coverage was so heavy and they were being bombarded, really, with bad press. And so they adopted a youth protection charter, which all the dioceses now have. It's imperfect. Some bishops don't follow it. But it has made important strides forward in protecting children in the church. They could do the same thing with money. They could institute a system-wide procedure to safeguard the parish collection plates.
And that makes sense. Anybody who's in business who has cash handling procedures knows that you want to have checks and balances, just as you described. Very interesting. We're talking to Jason Berry, author of the book, Render Unto Rome, The Secret Life of Money in the Catholic Church. And Jason, as I said in the setup, you went to Georgetown Jesuit High School. You're clearly steeped in the Catholic tradition. Are you considered persona non grata by the church because of all of this work and the books that you have published?
I wouldn't exactly say that. A lot of bishops won't return my calls, but I do have dialogue with others. I actually received an award from the Catholic Press Association for the book in 1992, and I got an award from a group called Voice of the Faithful, which is one of the reform groups. So even though a lot of members of the hierarchy don't like the bad news that has come out, and I was, you know, the first one to really break the abuse scandal story, I think many of them realize that, to blame the messenger is not a tactic that redounds very well to the image of a bishop or a cardinal. And even though I am an investigative reporter, I've never attacked the Catholic faith, and I still go to Mass myself.
Mm-hmm. No, that's good. Now, one final question, and that is, in America, we seem to be more of the reform movement than the Catholic Church in the rest of the world, whether it's Southeast Asia, Europe, and so forth. Are we on the forefront of the reform in these areas, or are we just right in the middle of the pack when it comes to demanding reform in the Catholic Church?
Well, what's happening in this country is being replicated in Germany, Austria, Belgium, and Ireland, which is just going through an agonizing national drama over this. We certainly get a good deal of the press because of the wealth and size of the United States. And I think everyone who follows this among various members of the media, and of course we all communicate now by email from different countries, we're all aware of the shrinking of the church. It is still the world's largest religion, but the second largest religious affiliation in the United States today is ex-Catholics. That's 10% of the U.S. population. 25% of the population is people who consider themselves Catholic. So, you know, Catholic schools are closing at a really numbing rate, and the church is so overdue for reform, and the pity of it is that we have not yet found many leaders. I think probably the foremost one is Dermot Martin, the Archbishop of Dublin, who is really tilting against the tide, but he is certainly a voice of moral imagination, and I think if more bishops followed his design, we would be a stronger and recovering church.
There we are. We've been talking to Jason Berry, author of the book Render Unto Rome, The Secret Life of Money in the Catholic Church. And Jason, if people really like what you have to say, they like the sound of your voice, they want to learn more, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I have a website. Thank you very much. It's jasonberryauthor.com, and I post a great deal of material there. There's links to television and radio interviews and the like, and it's pretty extensive and has quite a lot of material that people can get to.
That is great. Jason, thank you so much for being my special guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much, Bill. It's been a pleasure.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon.